Yes, welcome. It's a big Saturday with a difference here on 11:16 SEN. The difference because there's no AFL despite the fact that it is finals time, but a big crunch time coming up. We're going to speak about all the hot issues for the teams, both that have made it to the finals and those that haven't. Player movement is such a huge topic. Tom Petroro, leading player manager, is going to join us in the studio. There's a heap to get through. And the team are all here. That's the most important thing. And we weren't sure whether Derm would be able to show or not at his age. But Kingy, he's looking very fresh for having not played last night in the Legends game.
Yeah, I'm fresh. Don't worry about that.
Robbo, you're fresh as well. Surprisingly looking fresh.
Why would you be surprised, Anthony?
Well,
just saying you look a bit dusty on some Saturdays.
No, no. not many. No, a quiet night for me. I'm off to Inverloch today.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Grand final. Inverloch v Fish Creek, number one ticket holder. So they're playing at Meenyan. So straight from here, I'll get down there just after half time. Yeah, Inverloch Fish Creek Grand Final in the Alberton.
Really interesting story about Fish Creek over the years. Had the transformation of all the high.
Is this getaway?
For those that want to hear it, it's a podcast available.
There was an article done, 25 years ago. Something like 16 of the 20 players had to finish milking the cows before they could go out and play on the Saturday. Now there's like two who are involved in the dairy industry. But I'm all right. We had the aftermatch at the Prince Alfred Hospital, not the hotel.
I can't believe some of the stuff you did last night.
Let's not talk about that. Just move on.
Did you enjoy it? Was it good to be gallivanting around out there, Derm?
It's like having a good solid drink, Mark, and that is at the time you think you're having fun, but you really pay for it later.
How are we feeling about the bye at the halfway stage of the week off? I mean, I know it's the full. We've had the full week off, and is there any changes? I mean, there's certainly going to be some players that are thankful for it. Some of the clubs are going to be better off for having that extra week.
I heard Robbo talk about this and wanted to judge it after it had happened. It's certainly given us more time to look at these games, and there's a lot of chat about it. I'm not sure whether we've lost momentum necessarily. I thought the All Australians got some great coverage throughout the week.
Yeah, I agree. Plenty of discussion on there. It's exactly what the AFL wanted, Kingy.
And that hadn't happened before. I mean, the All Australian night had come and gone and been probably lost a little bit.
We had the All Australians been on a Tuesday night. So what happens? You wake up Wednesday morning, you look at the team. Right, and straight on to the first round of the weekend. Mm. Whereas today, there's been a lot of discussion about who's in and who's out.
Everyone's there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that certainly helped. I think it helps the whole Australian. But whether or not, I mean, I think TV numbers are actually down. So whether or not it has the overall impact, I guess we can't fully judge until.
I think one of the reasons.
A lot on TV last night. Sorry, there's a lot on TV last night.
The numbers would have been down because most of the viewing audience was on the front panel. How big was the panel?
It's massive, isn't it? Yeah. The All Australian selectors. That's right. It's a big, big panel. All right.
I'm going to propose changes to that panel, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but
you know, enough fights this year.
No, it's not so much of a fight, but
okay, this is good. Who's going out of the All Australian
fight anyway?
From the back line.
I can't believe. I know Kingy's sitting here, but I can't believe that the AFL Media Awards come out every year. David King's voted last year as the number one analyst. Dermot, you won an award last year.
Did I?
Did you?
I would argue.
Means the world to me.
I would argue that people who have been judged best analysts of the game
should be on the
All Australian panel. They see a lot of games, and in this case, Kingy. Dermot, you do as well. I'm not so much putting in you on the selection panel. I'd like to see you there, Derm. I spoke to Jonathan Brown and Jason Dunstall about this on Thursday night at some stages. I'll tell you why. I looked over at the panel, and they're wonderful football people. There's no doubt. They've given all their time. But I wanted to talk about the greatness of Patrick Dangerfield. I said to Jonathan Brown and Dunstall, I want to talk about the greatness of the best midfielder. And to do that, I want to talk to a great midfielder.
Yeah.
Like a great player, like a Lee Matthews or a Chris Judd. So people, I looked over and there was only really Kevin Bartlett, who was a great, great player. Now, I know Cameron Ling was a terrific footballer, but I could ask him how does he stop him, what does he see well, but I wanted to go to the mindset of the great player rather than the stopper.
Mm.
So I just think we need more great players on the panel. I really do.
And better analysts.
And I think if you've earned the right to be voted as the best analyst in the game, I think the best analyst in the game should be given a right to go on to the Hall of Fame committee. And the debate about, you know, some judges judge it over 2 years, 3 years. If we're going to call it the All-Australian Committee, you decide, righto, you can have two on, two off from the previous year. You put on people. If David King's been awarded the best analyst, righto, we're going on and off next year. You're off. Thanks, you've been off for 14 years. You might get back on it. But we're going to put David King and Dermot Breton on it next year. I think that gives a little bit more validity. Concentration on that year alone. And it's not a slight. People shouldn't take it as a slight that someone's better or someone's worse. Just that, you know, let's keep changing it up a little bit.
We could have the announcement of the All Australian selection panel.
Have a night of Fox nights.
Fox
would put it on.
Or the announcement.
Fox would put it on.
I think you've got to make some good points. But why would you have the same people every year for a 10-year block?
Yeah,
I think a rotation's a good idea because you can take a set against a player. You can. Look, there's some players I don't hold at the same level that others do, and it's why we have many people do special comments together because you see the game differently and you rate different things. So I think that's a good idea because what does a player X have to do to get into this squad? Does he have to change his game because the same selector doesn't pick him every time? Look, McGovern gets in this year off the back of two good years. Jack Stephen misses out this year off the back of two good years. If he has another one, does he get in? Or does the same criticism
come? Does Lachie Neal get in with the same year next year?
Lachie Neal's had an awesome... none of those omissions are wrong. There's no right or wrong here. But I think sometimes if you have a different set of eyes judging the same player, you get a different result.
Yeah, I think so. But that's, again, it's not a slight on individuals. It was a really enjoyable night. I thought the team was fantastic.
Great team.
But I tell you what, when I see Joel Selwood's named captain, and for an example, I know this didn't happen, but I don't want to hear so much Luke Darcy talking about Joel Selwood, because Luke would probably see what I see. He's a gun. I want to hear Lee Matthews talk about Joel Selwood. I want to hear Michael Voss. I know he can't because he's at Port Adelaide, but you know, that sort of standing. So can you tell us what leadership is? You tell us what standing up in the moment as a midfielder is. Why is this man All-Australian captain?
You could do that, though, even if they weren't selectors, though, couldn't you? You could still have Michael Voss talking about captaincy
or that sort of stuff. You could.
Well, I got one. The only criticism that I would have of anyone that's on that panel is any phrase that starts with, haven't seen a lot of them this year.
Yeah.
Only saw them a couple of times.
Did we hear that on Thursday night?
Not on Thursday
night. I've heard it previously.
I've heard it a lot throughout the year.
I don't
like that. I think if your job is to be judging that sort of award and those sorts of that criteria, then you need to be watching every game of footy.
All right, let's move on.
Hard to do.
Justin Lepich, the departure, not that it was any, we're looking at the stories of the week. Certainly was no great surprise. First of all, how do you think he's come out of it? How do you think Lepper's come out of the whole thing?
Come out as a sack coach. Everyone's starting to feel for him. So, you know what? Did you get an opportunity? Do you leave with us all knowing whether you're a good coach or not? He might have just been an unfortunate guy in a bad time. He really has. He might be really unlucky. Another thing, he might not be a good coach. Unfortunately, it's a ruthless business.
Do you think we'll ever know? Like, will he get a second chance potentially?
The thing is,
I'm not
going to
kick
let
a man while he's down.
No,
but,
if you
highly unlikely, in my opinion,
if you lose the senior coaching job, it's rare that you'll go back to be a line coach, which is another job. The preferred option is to be the senior assistant, the 2IC, who doesn't really have a line responsibility. You're going back to be the 2IC, second in charge at a club. Will Lepper, I don't think Lepp would go back to be a line coach. Would he go back to be a...
He's young. I mean, he's got plenty of time. If he wants to stay in the
coaching.
Game, we've seen Ratten, we've seen others go back and be...
I just think little things with Lepper have hurt him. Just the events of last year, you know, losing the players, fighting with the players. These are the kinds of stories that got out and, you know, and Lepper set about. And Bad life, Derm. I knew Lepper was on the footy show, so I IQ'd it, so I wanted to listen to Lepper, so I watched it when I got home on Thursday night. he spoke really, really well. But there was just, you know, little things with Leper and the players, which I think will always be attached to Leper's coaching career at Brisbane. Now, they might have been minor things, but there might have been a bunch of minor things.
You walk out of that, though, and I get the feeling... Sorry, we walk out. Leper walks out of that job, and I get the feeling that Leper doesn't have that job because of two reasons. The team wasn't capable enough to display enough footballing business to see if the coach could actually, in-game, manipulate them around enough, utilise his game style enough to get them wins. What I see, the reason why Leper's out of it, is because of relationship build or the inability to build relationship with
some. Which is crucial now.
So we don't know whether Lep can coach. If you want to say that relationship build is the major part of coaching, okay, we'll run up the white flag. But I don't think it is on football acumen alone that Justin Lepich hasn't got that job.
Let's talk about the job that's vacant now. I mean, as to A, how good it is for someone to come in, and Leper made the point that he reckons it'll be a much better job for the person coming in now than it was for him, given where the list was at.
That's a fair comment too.
Yeah, it probably is in terms of the youth that he's got coming through.
I don't necessarily sign off on that. They traded a pick 5 away to get Beams, a pick 25 to get Christensen, a pick mid-20s to
I accept that as well.
In one season. So they've got a year where they don't have a draft pick.
With that, Kingy, the two boys they've got, Hipwood not
and
Shaggy. No, not Hipwood and...
Himmelman or...
Yeah. Those two 6'5", 6'6" players. If they had a come out of pick 25 and pick 5, would you say that's about right?
Yeah, I don't think you're either channeling your energies to be competitive for the now, or you're building. Yeah. You're speculating for 4 or 5 year period down the track. You can't put a toe in each camp. That's where I think you run aground.
But they thought they needed just a little bit of experience to help that.
And that's okay. But this is what happens at the end of it. Mm. You end up with a confused program.
I think one of the things really interesting now with the decision on who they go for is, I think they've all recognised that the head of football is as an important appointment as the coach. Now, whether that's true or not, that feeling is they need that experienced head of football, and names like Noble and Fagan and Balm have been thrown up. They've also been thrown up, certainly Noble and Fagan, as potential actual senior coaches. And it's my understanding that certainly Chris Fagan and probably Noble as well wouldn't. It would be hard to get them up there for anything other than being the senior coach, because why would they want to leave? Unless you're going to throw huge financial...
It's not for sale, but everything has a price. And unfortunately, the league has to pay for that. Mark, you'd probably know, it's going to cost them so much to pay out Lep and start to build other areas, their training facilities, and pay over and above. We're going to have, as a league, throw more money to them.
So what do you do, though, Kingy? Do you pay that extra money to get a David Noble, if you think that he's an outstanding candidate? Do you pay him there to be the head of footy, or do you pay that money there to actually, and then make him the coach? Because if you make him the head of footy, you can still bring in the next gun assistant, whoever it is, whoever's recognised, and make him the coach.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I think that's the challenge. Still putting that name on paper, this man's our coach. There's no guarantees. I mean, Mark Rusciutto's done an amazing job with the two selections at Adelaide. But outside of that, it is a guessing game. I mean, Adam Simpson applied for that Brisbane job when Justin Lepich actually won the position. So you can sit in front of these people, but it's hard to draw out the full package of information out of them through an interview process, I think. I mean, Doom, you've sat in on those interviews. I think there'd be confusion if you're saying we're going to talk to this guy about two positions. One a senior coach, one
that won't be happening.
I don't think that can actually happen.
It's interesting about the money situation, you know, and the question has to be asked: what role did the AFL play in Justin Lepich's demise? Because they're bailing him out. They're not bailing him out. They already owe the AFL $6 billion. They're another $6 million in debt. So they're $12 million in debt. They've got to pay out a fine a year, and the AFL's injecting more money into their football department next year. So they have to run it by the AFL. Hey, we're just about to say we're going to sack Justin Lepich here. The AFL say yes or no. So they have a fair say. Brisbane said, I asked Greg Swan, how much say is the AFL going to have in the new coach? He says, no, it's our decision. Yeah, I think we'll be pulling back on that answer. The AFL will be having, will cast an eye over that decision. Now, that's just one aspect. Now, who do they go for? I don't think Chris Fagan is their senior coach. I think if they're going to get Chris Fagan, they're going to get him as head of football. Chris Fagan's 55. He hasn't coached for 12 years. Okay. Now, I spoke to him Thursday night at the All Australian. And John Anderson had written a piece in the Herald Sun that day saying, oh, Chris Fagan's the number one favourite. And Fags actually said, I got told that. And I went, what? Am I? I'm the best candidate? Now, he's a really good football person. But he and his wife have to decide at 55 years of age, we're going to up stump, go into state. What? You've got to get a 5-year deal. You can't be going to rebuild a football club on a 2-year deal. So he's got to go for a 5-year deal. How much is a head of football do, Kingy?
Head of football?
Head of football. Oh, half a million?
No. No. Anyway, I would say anywhere from 250 to 450 tops.
So they've got to fix his football club, and Chris Fagan, you might have to notionally right now, yeah, is the number one, notionally the number one football boss at a football club. It's been at Hawthorn. They're flying in every aspect.
It costs you more to have a poor one than it does to pay overs for the right one.
Because all the mistakes.
You end up with no support for a young senior coach. I mean, Justin Lepich is 41. It's too young to be done as a senior coach at that stage of his life. I mean,
Voss was the same. Herb was the same.
It's a brutal industry, and often if you look at the American program, it wouldn't be looked at that age. You've got to be 50 until you get that opportunity and have experienced the whole gamut of what AFL can throw at you.
Not just AFL, life throw at you. I think the person they are looking for, this is the type of person they are looking for, an Alan Richardson type. 48 when he got his job at St Kilda, mature, been around football clubs, life savvy, you know, because these young kids now, Dermot, they're just presenting problems after problems, dealing with young people. So if you're looking at a specimen, they are looking for an Alan Richardson
type. And who is that?
Now, if you go
there's
through
no obvious
all
ones, is
the
there?
Clubs and their assistant coaching ranks, they're a little bit bare. Now, if you look at the Level 4 accreditation group, they're not going to get a Blake Carosella who's probably a really, really wise football head, but he's never coached his own team. How can they possibly get someone from the Level 4 to go up and go into that mess and say, well, you've never coached before. You haven't even coached, haven't really managed a whole group. Can you go up there and coach? That's suicidal. You can't be doing that. So they're going to, I don't know who's out there, but they've got to find someone who has had some experience that's coaching an own group.
Well, John Barker's coached Carlton for a while.
John Barker's right in the mix. Mm. He's right in the mix. Level 4, so the AFL will tick that off.
Yeah.
Level 4, AFL likes him, former Brisbane Lion, had experience at the Carlton job. He's ticking a lot of boxes. I actually, not name dropping, but I was waltzing around the room on Thursday night.
Moving beautifully.
I had one beer and I saw Brendan Bolton. So I went over to Brendan Bolton. I said, g'day, how's your year? I had a bit of a chat.
G'day, Robbo.
And you're taking off Brendan Bolton.
No, I just said g'day.
Yes, you were making fun of Brendan Bolton.
Yeah, yeah. He's taller.
He calls
than you.
Him Mark as
well. He's taller than you. He'll get you.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not.
So anyway, I was talking to him, and I spoke to him
covered
about
with heart.
I spoke to him about the Level 4 accreditation, and I think, like most people from the outside looking in, say, "Well, what is that? Right? What do you do?" Right? A person who's done it said it was brutal. Now, Brendan Bolton, I asked him about it on Thursday night. He said, "Mate, it's really, really tough. It's a lot of emotional self awareness, who you are as a person." And I thought, well, it's interesting, how do you have that, a test and learnings for that? But he said, oh, yeah, you've got a full understanding of what a senior coaching job would be like from doing the Level 4. Now, again, I'd like to get hold of exactly what it is.
How long is the
No, I do not know. If
Why
I had a guess.
Why don't you do it?
Sorry?
Why don't you do it?
You've got to do level 3.
You'll be one of the great articles.
We could do it for you. this afternoon.
Number four.
Okay, to be honest,
start with a bit of leading teams, Mark.
Could you imagine? That's okay. Everyone, that's easy. No mirrors at your place, too? And actually, that's a lie. There's mirrors everywhere at your place.
I'm struggling to find a wall,
on the
without,
roof.
Wall without one.
On the ceiling.
But I would reckon...
You've got to push the button to get that to slide out.
Yeah. The AFL wouldn't allow it, but wouldn't that be terrific to get an insight?
It'd be fantastic.
You know what, supporters would like that too, because...
The level four, I think that program should be covered more extensively than what it is now. We should know, but I think the coach will come from level four. I think it has to.
What if they haven't coached before, Kingy?
Well,
your own group.
That's why I say this. Every coach we're putting on at the moment is mid-40s or early 40s.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
We went the other way. We got Roosie at 52. We got Alan Richardson.
Yeah, Roosie's a special case.
But we got Ken Hinckley. Ken Hinckley was late. Rockett was old.
Yeah.
Because after the mistakes of Herd, Voss, now Leper.
Beveridge, Simpson.
What are they, 46, 45?
Simo's been
fantastic. But I thought clubs were going back to a bit of an older, which was your point 5 minutes ago about the American style. You can't have Justin Lepage out of his career gone in football at 41.
Because he went
to his first coaching gig. Maybe wasn't ready.
He interviewed well, now he's out of a job at 41.
It's crazy.
Hmm. I think the supporters would love to get an insight into that level four coaching criteria. I'd love to know what it was like, because then you'd understand what your coach is attempting to implement at your club. You'd understand, if you were a Richmond supporter now, and God love them, poor buggers have been through a lot, you'd want to know what was being attempted at your club, wouldn't you? You'd want to know the inner... Not inside the coach's room, but you'd want to know the machinations of what that level four coaching criteria has impregnated in the coach, that's what he wants to do with his club.
Can I ask you quickly, if you were interviewing a coach, how much of it, of the 100%, how much of it would you want to know about their tactical match day ability versus the rest, which is big, the management, the relationships, all how big is, in your mind, Kingy, first of all, is tactical, being able to see things both during the week and particularly during the match?
No, I don't think that's that important.
Don't you?
I think you can have people underneath you that can do that. You don't have to be strong in that area. I think the number one thing is you have to know where you're poor, and you have to make sure that that's identified and that's catered for in your assistant coaches or your director of coaching underneath you. I think that's the number one thing. And I think the relationship with the players is well and truly number one. As soon as you lose the players in any way, shape or form, you are done.
See, and that's why you have selection panels for coaches. I think it's incredibly strong. Incredibly strong.
Tactical.
I'm surprised.
I thought you would be stronger on that, King.
But the reason...
I think every coach has got a brand. But to separate that in an interview is almost impossible. You've got guys that sit down and can talk about the game until the cows come up.
Yeah.
To actually sit there and say, does he understand X, Y, and Z?
But they're getting better.
Almost impossible to...
But what will happen
is... I reckon
is
you
your...
would know, though. Sorry, Tim. I reckon if you sat down and I had three different candidates here in front of you would work away with a... He knows it better than him and him.
Yeah, that's fair. I reckon you could have your own opinion on it, but until you see it.
Yep.
And often the plan they start with is not
different.
The plan they finish. I mean, Alistair Clarkson's presentation isn't the way they've played the last four years.
But the reason, I'll just finish off on that one, and that is a player, if he hears his coach believe in something which they think is false, if he hears his coach come to the table with the playing plan that they know that coach doesn't fully own, that's the assistant coach's owner, they might have the best relationship with that coach, but they'll walk all over him.
How does a panel judge a person's aura, ability to... People could say, Dermot, he's great relations. He can talk to players. It's fantastic. Okay. But how does a panel of five, and I've spoken to Terry Wallace about this, and he sat on the Essendon search for a new coach, which is probably one of the most recent. How do you judge these little intangibles like aura and leadership and pressure moments, standing up and being that great leader?
It's very
leader,
difficult to judge them, but you have
which
to.
Which history tells us that they separate the great coaches from the good coaches. You know, it's not all about premierships. It's about Well, it is about premierships, but if you look through the great coaches of our, they had great authority. They had great prowess to get into people's minds. They had great aura. They walk in the room and went, bang,
but don't,
here they are.
Even the dour ones are charismatic. Mm. I mean, Dennis Pagan, he had a certain charisma about him.
I knew when he was in the room.
Yeah. Alan Jeans was a bald-headed, big-eared bloke who wore glasses, and he was the most charismatic man in the room.
Would it
Lee
be
Matthews,
wrong to say that
charismatic?
Would it be wrong to say if Adam Simpson walked into a big room, would people go, "There's Adam Simpson"?
You never know. Have you been in the room?
No, I have, but I'm just trying to think. I mean, maybe because I've seen him play football.
If he wins
by
one,
my
he
own.
Will.
Yeah, maybe it changes a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure it does, but I reckon it's very difficult.
Also, we've got to take a break, but I also think the old, you know, talking to people, not just the old reference, you know, here's a reference, he's been a terrific person, you know, and you say all the nice things.
Paid me back too, Bob, 10 years ago.
But really talking to people who have worked with these people, if you do your research,
more than that,
do
you know what they do? They talk to teachers who taught them 25 years ago. They talk to people who worked with them 15 years ago. They talk to people that might have gone to university with
truant
them.
Truant officers?
We need to take a break.
Do you know any?
On that note.
Dodged them.
Plenty coming up. Tom Petroio, leading player manager, is going to join us. But we're going to talk about the finals next as well. Here on Crunch Time, the Australian Property Group Wholesale Mortgage Fund are returning 7% per annum paid quarterly. Ringwood Mazda, score a demo deal now. And there's lots of other issues to come up in the crunch, including your article this morning on the future of Travis Cloak. Ah, yes, it is. Crunch Time, as you heard, for the Australian Property Group, the Wholesale Mortgage Fund returning 7% per annum paid quarterly. And Ringwood Mazda, score a demo deal now. Let's get into some quickfire questions on the finals teams, boys. North Melbourne have been very topical, even though they've probably had a few days off. Petrie or Magic Door for the finals, or even both for the first week of the finals?
Who opens the batting? I'm still going Drew Petrie. I know we'll probably get some opposition in this room. I want to see a warrior stand up. I want to see his mates gain a little bit of strength out of that and be inspired by him.
I can't see Brad dropping Drew Petrie. I just can't see it.
I can't see North Melbourne going into a big final with Madge Ekdor as one of their top line big men. I don't think he's ready yet.
Is there a way that they can beat Adelaide, do you think?
I think there is. I think the Crows play a different brand of football. There's a lot of damage done off half back. Their midfield, they virtually bypass. It's so quick the way they play. Over the back, over the top, into space, and their forwards are charging back. I think the better teams have been able to shut them down. They've been able to slow that ball movement down.
Can North do that?
Well, they haven't shown it this year, but they can.
The one thing I would say is that two ingredients which weren't there when they got knocked over in the final game a couple of weeks ago was no Brodie Smith off the back flank, who goes inside forward 50 the most of anyone, and Rory Sloane's ability to win the footy. So try and turn up and take those two out of the game again in some way, shape or form. Sweat on Brodie Smith. I reckon you can truly cancel him out and do and whatever way your midfield coach decides, plan against Rory Sloane to have little effect.
Can North Melbourne... What's North Melbourne like on the big ground of Adelaide Oval?
Because if they got smacked in round one last year, they got pulverised.
Yeah. Right, so if they go too defensive to stop all their run, they're gone.
Adelaide
they're
gone. Just dragged it out of the middle willfully.
And if they say, we're going to take on the game, I don't think North have got enough legs and stuff.
Well, what's their strength, the Kangaroos? I think when you look at their whole profile, they don't have a weapon.
They had a weapon. It was the three tall forwards. Well,
Wade's played two games in 8 weeks.
But that disappeared. Yeah.
The one thing I'd say that can be a weapon for them is the half-back line of Attlee, and if McMillan gets his run up again, if Attlee can get his wheels on, they can actually make the ball travel from inside the 50-metre defensive arc through inside their own.
You just summed up North Melbourne's problems. If you think their two weapons are Sean Attlee of our back flank, who's had a so-so year. Jamie McMillan's had a cracking year, actually.
Number 29, mate. It all comes back to Harvey.
He's had a cracking year.
Former Kangaroo. Hawthorne, has it lost its fear factor? And
yes.
Does that matter for the finals?
It has lost a bit of its fear factor, but I don't think it matters to them.
That's a good call. I think that... Again, we keep saying it. If you could just start the game like basketball, at zero all with 2 minutes to go.
Then you back them.
Outside of that, they've shown big patches this year where they can go, they can just be off for 10 minutes and the opposition haven't been able to put them away. We've watched games together all throughout the season, Derm. Kangaroos had them, couldn't put them away. Collingwood had them, couldn't put them away. So they've been on the verge of bust.
They've got a lot of youngsters in there.
Yeah, there is,
now.
Yeah. It's
There's
a different
a
team
a lot
now.
Of young blood in there. The one thing I'd say, though, is it is more than likely, if you're going to win the premiership, more than likely you will have to beat the Hawks on the MCG somewhere in the last 8 days.
The beauty of football and why... Dermot, you're being the media and Kingy and all that sort of stuff is you win finals, you're playing finals, finals football changes. Dermot, you've been telling us about it for a million years. What Hawthorn have got, what other clubs have yet to prove, is an ability to stand up when the pressure and intensity goes to a higher level. Now, we can watch home and away football. And then you say, oh, God, if they play like that in the finals, they're going to win it. But it's very difficult to play like that in finals because the opposition team's pressure and intensity and energy levels generally are pretty solid. Hawthorn have been able to cope with that. Now, until Sydney beat them, Geelong beat them. Until Adelaide prove themselves that they can do that, I think Hawthorn are better than them. Finals separates men from boys, teams who think they're good enough and the teams that can do. Hawthorn, I think, can do.
Well, just on that, then, is there any MCG worries for the Cats? Yes, they beat Hawthorn there in round one, but three other struggling performances since then against Essendon a fair while ago, a loss to Collingwood, and only just to Richmond.
I know this gets bashed every time you mention numbers, but I'm yet to be convinced that when you get beaten by 25... contested possessions a week against the top eight teams, that's a profile of a premiership team. And until I see it with my own eyes, I can't be tipping Hawthorn to win it. Basically saying Geelong are going to get...
Haven't they won that before? Haven't they?
Yeah, but not, this is where you get back to your point. Finals footy means they have to win that. They have to be able to pressure like nothing else, like we've never seen before.
But that's what they do well, isn't it?
If they give... But they have done well. I mean, we're talking about the youth in the team now.
The profile of it is, though, Kingy, the profile of it is, if they can half live with that if the clearance is put under pressure, because Hawthorn are able to peel off and wheel away and be third man up, win the ball, and then they don't give it back to you. The team that hurts them when they win that much are teams like GWS, because when they win at the stoppage, they don't hack it forward.
No.
They run it forward and they get to the front side of the congestion and then they look to do what they want with it, and that's what hurts.
What about Geelong, though, with the G? Is there any worries for them?
Well, same thing again. Dangerfield was stepping the difference out in round one because his ability to be in the congestion and then by the time he released the footy, he was 7 to 15 yards ahead of the congestion with the ball, skating downhill and looking what he wanted to do with it, not labouring, hack-kicking a kick forward. He's the linchpin.
What are your fears on Geelong, both of you?
Yeah, Dangerfield and probably professionalism across the ground with their experienced players, a little bit of their forward line, but Geelong's back line don't pose any great threats for Hawthorn's forward line.
I think that's a good point. I think their slower ball movement, we haven't seen that win finals.
From the back half?
From the back half. No. They play a measured game where they bring it slowly down the field. It allows them the luxury of time to get their defenders set in the position so they can lock it in their forward half. It's a Fremantle profile of 2 and 3 years ago, and we haven't seen that do it yet in big games. So that's the query. They could do it. Got a lot of experience there, but it's the query.
Is there any way that Jake Stringer won't play in the first week?
He's playing.
Got to play.
It would be. If you some of the balls he's coaching I've ever seen, if he doesn't play. Like, I know Beveridge can say it's my way or the highway, but I mean, to leave him out would be a bold coaching move.
They could have Liberatore back and McRae back and Easton Wood back. So this week off, they just could be the biggest beneficiaries of the whole thing.
Could you run McRae and Liber off no games into a final on a big round like Subiaco?
He's a gambler. I reckon he's a gambler. We saw
but can you afford to be a gambler? Don't you have to sometimes be safe or not?
Can you afford not to be in
can
this case?
Can you afford not to be? Yeah. Look, in a lot
we
of ways,
we don't want to run
free.
Out of...
Well, he's actually...
Johannesson,
he's
come
actually,
back after 10 weeks.
Yeah, but he's actually given it to goal. His players in the past. So you do the work and I'll throw you in there. Mm. So the team he's got at the moment have actually worked pretty hard. I don't know whether he can turn around and say, look, you've done everything I've asked, but you're out for a bloke who hasn't played for 8 weeks.
Well, their last game was ordinary, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so that gives you the...
They fell over there.
They beat the Eagles at Etihad, I know, but it's still a win against them. The plan was there. Kennedy kicked one goal. They planned that perfectly. Liberatore kicked three as a midfielder roaming around. Now, I know there's fitness queries and that sort of thing. McRae had high 30s. So I think that those guys are so important to them that they have to come back.
West Coast Eagles, you talked about the Eagles. Is their form real or fake? Sounds like an episode of Seinfeld.
They've beaten the last
real
3 weeks. GWS at Spotless. They've
tough,
beaten
very tough.
They've beaten Hawthorn and they've beaten Adelaide away.
They're almost the form team of the competition. Well,
it's great form. And we hadn't seen it for 20 weeks.
What are they doing
if
different?
If they were top four with that form, you'd just about put them into favouritism.
I asked Kingy on Wednesday night on 360. I'll ask you to, what are they doing in the last 3 weeks that haven't been able to put together for the first 16, 17 weeks?
Their midfield's getting much more pressure on the opposition, by the way. They're capturing the footy. Gaff going into the middle has actually given them another avenue, access to the ball. Pritis keeps doing what he does.
You remember when you interviewed Pritis, you guys, Fox Footy, after a game, and Pritis said, you know, we were just surging the ball forward out of stoppages. I reckon Gaff going into the middle has meant they're not doing that as much because he's so sure-handed. King, you coached him. We've all seen him. He's clean with the pill, so he'll handball it. Whereas Pritis admitted on Fox, I'm sure you were interviewing him, dude. He admitted that, we were just getting the ball and basically hacking it forward. Now they're sort of holding on to it. And Gaff's at the back. And Daniel Harford picked this up. If you look at the stoppages, picked it up. Daniel Harford pointed out to me and I started watching and going, look where he's standing. He stands at the back of the stoppage.
Oh, yeah. But they have one there all the time.
Yeah, but he does it. And he's so cool and calm when he gets the pill. I reckon he's been a huge move into the midfield, into the starting group.
And the other one that's helped them is I'm just trying to look up his name now. The other left footer, who's
Sheed.
Dom Sheed. His form's been fantastic.
Their biggest win is now they've got two intercept marks at centre half back and fullback in McGovern and Barras.
He's been extraordinary, Barras.
I think that's the hardest thing to plan against, denying two intercept markers.
And that gets back to. Once you, if you say that's the strength of them, which it is a strength, but you put them on a ground that's 21 metres wider.
But they do it there.
At the MCG.
Oh, yeah.
At the MCG. That's
big ask,
the question.
Big ask for an 18-year-old. I mean, if they went through all the way and Barras is that person at 18 and 14 games of footy, we're just about to see one of the great final series of a young player.
Mm. All right, the Sydney Swans, do their young blokes stand up in the finals, and does their game changes and that they've done with more short kicking, does that stand up?
You're big on the changes, aren't you?
Yeah, when Jared Hilly put it up on the couch and you're on the couch with him, Kingy, when he put those numbers up and they've gone from 17th, 16th, 18th to 1, 2 and, 2 and 1 and ranked in their kicking and ability to move the ball, I listen to you guys all the time. Nothing happens by per chance. Oh, suddenly Sydney have decided they're going to go shorter with the ball. Don't worry about you, John Longmire.
John Longmire said during the week? Oh, we had a few wet games here at the start of the
year.
Yes,
Come on. We had to kick it long.
Yeah. It was on 360.
They played a foreign country to us.
Yeah. I do remember a couple of wet games.
They had the monsoon up north.
Give them five wet ones.
They won in Sydney against Melbourne.
Haven't had 23 of them, have they?
No, but Kingy, the numbers... which is your forte, you don't go from 17th to 1 and 2 on the back.
By mistake either.
And what it shows to me when I watch Sydney, mate, their power and their ability, McGlynn kicking goals, and Buddy, I could talk about it.
Couldn't get a game all year, McGlynn. Yeah.
Their biggest change without doubt.
Offensive football is awesome.
Is they now have a ruckman.
Naismith?
They have never had a tap ruckman like this guy. In the last 6 weeks since he's gone in and played first ruck, their clearance scoring's gone through the roof. Five goals on their opposition.
Because he's not a good player, but he's a good ruckman.
He's a great tap ruckman. That's a great point. They're young players. They've
well,
got.
I mean, if yeah. you're laughing.
Well, he's a good ruckman.
Yeah, makes him.
I know, but
that makes him a good player.
It doesn't. He, as a ruckman, yeah, but he's not Jimmy Steins. He won't find it around the ground. He won't touch it.
They haven't had a good tap ruckman. So that's one thing that Parker, we've never seen. Kennedy on the fly, we've never seen. Mm. And now we're starting to see them proactive and not winning the ball in tight and in close. 2 metres outside the stoppage, they're getting ball now.
Speaking of ruckman, Mumford, does he still hold the key to the Giants? Yeah. If you can stop him, does it still stop them?
I've seen a lot of their games this year. And each time... If he's out, you start with somebody else, blah, blah, blah. He hasn't missed that many games this year. But each time he's played and the opposition ruckman has done well on him, the opposition win.
Who is Zach the Smith? Reserve ruckman? Lobb.
You can throw Rory Lobb in there. They've also got big...
Dawson Simpson.
Big Simpson, 208 centimetres of him. He's huge.
Hasn't played this Tom Downey,
no, hasn't
I think.
Tom Downey's another one.
It's funny, again, the way... GWS have played and the numbers that put up and the kind of player they play some breathtaking football. Breathtaking. Your arguing is that Mumford doesn't play well or Mumford doesn't play that breathtaking football can't. Are you saying that breathtaking football can't take him all the way to a premiership?
The chances are reduced.
How significant or just
a
little
significant.
Bit?
Well, their main strength is teams fear them at the stoppage because, as we said 3 minutes ago, their ability to take the tap for the underneath players and get away at speed and then be forward of the congestion where the pack was, and then they look to do what they want with the footy. There's no real, well, there's running and sprint pressure, but there's no real heat on them harassing them.
If the Crows hadn't dropped that last game, they'd finish fifth. We wouldn't be talking like this. Mm-hmm. That's my fear with them, that maybe they've got a position that is maybe a false read on them. I'm not sure whether...
Well, that might prove to be the luckiest thing that's ever happened
exactly.
to them.
Exactly. We've never seen a year like this. So even across
what
the
about,
top six
what
or seven
about
games.
their forward 50? It's been quite incredible because at the start of the year, everyone's going, what's Jeremy Cameron going to do? By the mid-year, everyone was going, Rory Lobb's just the most... He's just gone through the roof. And now everyone's saying Jonathan Patton. So they've got the three tools. They've got Johnson and Toby Green.
He's their most important forward. And
the resting mid, right? So there's their starting six. Toby Green's year kingy, rewarded with all the strain on Thursday night.
If you stop
night.
Toby Green, you shut down 50% of their scoring. I've got no doubt about that.
With his pressure and his assist.
He's
his
a little
assist,
bit like Tom Lynch from Adelaide.
Assist, and his goal kicking.
He's the player that takes it from
different
the midfield
sort of
inside
connecting
50,
player, though, isn't he? To
and he
Tom
can get
Lynch.
Out the back. He's a gun runner. He's an elite runner.
He's an elite
He doesn't look like it.
Not quick.
He's just not quick, but he keeps going.
I think
there'll be a lot of time put into him over the next four
There's
weeks.
There's one that is a very good player, which has just slipped in the last two games, who is an exceptionally good player, and I probably rate him higher than most others do viewing them, and that's Devin Smith. Mm. Don't be surprised if he can bob up in a final kicking three goals.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah,
he's a good player.
He won't die not knowing Devin Smith.
Well, he's going to take three shots, you know that.
Just the man they needed to come in and mentor, wasn't it? Was Stevie J. He really needed assistance in that area. We're going to take a break. Plenty more crunch questions coming up, the big issues of footy. But next, Tom Petroro drops in, leading player manager, to join us to talk about the ever-changing trade landscape. This is 1116 SEN. It's crunch time for you on a Saturday with a difference. Plenty of footy coming up later on SEN with all the VFL action as well. For the Australian Property Group, Wholesale Mortgage Fund returning 7% per annum paid quarterly. And Ringwood Mazda, score a demo deal now. Welcome back to Crunch Time for the Australian Property Group, Wholesale Mortgage Fund returning 7% per annum paid quarterly. And Ringwood Mazda, score a demo deal now. We're joined in the Crunch Time studio today by none other than Tom Petroro from Stride Sports Management. Busy time coming up, Robbo, for all the managers out there. I already feel like we're in trade week. Tommy, already, are we in trade week yet or not?
No, I think it's just preliminary work, but let's get back to playing footy next week and focus on, I guess, what's important and what's special about September.
We'll ask you about a couple of your clients, but before we do that, on a broader sense, so there is a fascination, the media, we're certainly part of it, and the extra social media there is now. I know Robbo says the biggest story that creates the most traffic on the Herald Sun websites and on our websites are trade stories. So what's actually going on behind the scenes right now with clubs and players?
Yeah, so from a club point of view, obviously 10 are finished. So their focus is clearly trade, their own list, how they're planning for next year. So those clubs, probably with some clubs that are in finals included, are on their merry-go-round and they're meeting with each other. So clubs are saying, well, look, these are probably the guys in our list that may move. Have you got any interest? You know, what sort of value do you put on that player? And then is there something we can do? And then obviously us as agents in the background are ringing around saying, oh, you know, player X isn't getting the opportunity that he wants. He is contracted, spoken to his club. They've got some interest in moving him on, but it has to be, it's obviously worth X or Y. Or I guess we're working around to say, working with clubs to say, well, hold on, we genuinely know this guy's going to leave, so what do you need for him? These are the three or four clubs interested. How are we going to start working through that?
What sort of percentage, and has this changed, of the players that are potentially going to move, of your lot and for what you know, are actually in contract versus out of contract?
Yeah, good question. So it's probably, I would say that it's a greater number now that players move in contract. Some of that will be agent and player driven. Some of that will be club driven. And that'll be club driven because clubs are saying, well, hold on, we want to rejuvenate our list. We've underachieved. Or, you know what, we thought we were a lot closer to the premiership window than we were, but we're not. So we actually want to go to the draft. And player X has got some currency. Let's get ourselves into the first round or an early second round pick because it's a good draft coming up. We want to be able to go to the draft with four or five picks and start again.
What's changed? Great to see you this morning, Tom. What's changed is the fact that when you had a contract 5 years ago, that was it. You had a contract and clubs would say, oh, we're a bit tied up. We've got all these contracts we've got to honour. Now, clubs are actively saying, despite your contract, we'll entertain offers for you. And contracted players of all ages are now saying, I can get out of this club if I want to. That, to me, has been, in the player movement, that has been enormous change from 5 years ago.
Yeah, and that comes a bit with the introduction of free agency and the freedom of movement. But it also, it stands for what I'm, so the North Melbourne decision 10 days ago, or whenever it was, the four boys that weren't going to go on. I reckon 4 years ago, everyone said, oh, Boomer can't play anywhere else. And Dell shouldn't play on. And, you know, Drewy and Spud, they've got to stay where they are. You know what? It's a commercial industry and it's a business.
That's changed.
That's changed big time. Yeah. And well done to Stevie Johnson. He copped his knockers through the, you know, process at the end of last year. But
he's helped change it, mate. He's sure helped change it.
But James Kelly's changed it.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
Has,
look, he's runner-up in their BNF 2 nights ago. He wasn't playing in January. His deal didn't get done till the end of February.
Now, the only problem with all this is, and I've looked at it this week. Now, we're in the business of writing stories. Radio here is in the business of trying to discuss issues. I wouldn't be surprised if 70% of names come up on all the lists. He's interested in, they might go, they've been linked to there. There's just going to be so much banter. It's going to be difficult for A, journos, and B, the public, especially to separate what is fact and what is fiction. For example, the Jack Riewoldt discussion has been going on for, what, a week and a half? You listen to some media people, club don't want him, they're upset with him, Jack upsets everyone there, he wants out. I spoke to Jack on Tuesday night after 360, spoke to him on the show, in depth after the show. Do you want to leave, Jack? No, I don't. Do you think the club's going to trade it? No, they're not. I spoke to Richmond yesterday. Are you going to trade Jack? Absolutely not. But Jack's name will continue to bubble along and create not just headlines, but back page headlines. I think this scrambled period is going to see a lot of players upset because they're going to be linked at other clubs. But Tom, as a manager, there's a major difference between Jack Riewoldt's name, for example, coming up and clubs inquiring about him, which people will construe as Richmond putting him up for trade. There's a hell of a difference, but I don't think people will understand that.
Yeah, and I think I ask fans to be patient and just see what happens before they get upset that the marquee player's on the trade table, because the marquee player may not be on the trade table. It may be that another club
has asked
about him. Yeah. So, and I got a call the other night about Jackson Trengove, who's had an outstanding second half of the year, and he's probably helped Port stay alive a little bit. Jacko's got a year to run. Jason Cripps had called me earlier in the week to say, you know what, over the next couple of weeks, let's sit down and extend him out.
Yep.
Jerno rings and says, I'm hearing Trengove's on the table. And I'm like, no, Jackson's not on the table. He's the lifeblood of Port at the moment. Yeah. He's the warrior. But it's easy for us to blame the journos to say, well, they just want to write a story. But it's not that, not necessarily that. It might be another club agitating because they want that type of player.
We think we can get Jackson Trengove.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you reckon? Well, you know, we'll discuss it with him. Oh, he's a possible trade. So we're going to have so many coulds and maybes stories that people from the next month have just got to just chill out.
I think too, the other part is that we live in a world that is so now, so social media, whatever we can get up on Twitter. And I was pretty disappointed yesterday. Jerno went on Twitter and said, I can't believe Marchbanks told GWS this early. Well, hold on. Where have you got this from? Because maybe we've been talking to GWS all year and they've said to us, hey, as soon as you can make a decision, it's okay. If he wants to go home, we'll deal with it.
And tell us.
Because you know what? It's probably holding us up to recontract another defender we've got on our list or another tool. So Caleb's season's over. And it wasn't like Caleb walked in there and bashed it down. It was a two-way conversation to say, hey, you know what? The sooner we know as a club, the sooner we can prepare.
But
and then
you can't worry about that, Tom, can you? I know he's your man.
I'll tell you this. The kids worry about it. The players still read it. The players have got feelings.
So what do you do? Do you contact the Juno or do you just say, righto, I'll just park that in my memory bank?
A bit of both. If I know the journo, I'll call him and say, hey, mate, you're out of line. You missed that one. Why didn't you call me and ask me about it? If I don't know them, I'll probably park it. And
it's a really difficult period because the journo, say I had a story, right, and I rang Tom. So Tom, and I've got a reasonable relationship with Tom. Tom, I need to ask you this question. That's all you can do as a journo, ring. Now, Tom might not be in a position to tell me the truth on it. I'm not saying he's lying, but he's not in a position to tell me the truth. And I say, now, I'm hearing that Marchbank wants to go to Carlton. Tom says, well, it's too early. It's too early. I can't reveal that. You say, okay. So you don't go with the story. 3 days later, there's a story. Marchbank could be in line to line up at Carlton, and there's the connection in the media. You've told me 2 days earlier that it's not true.
Yeah.
But this moves really quickly. It can move in 24 hours. Myself, I had a conversation with Sam Medman, and I think it was Clarkie involved. I can't remember, at work the other day. I said, what's going to happen with Trade Week when we've got 9 journos here chasing Trade Week stories and everyone's crossing over and 5 of us will... I remember talking to you, Tom Jr. You said to me, you're the 4th Herald Sun journo to ring me this week. Yeah. And I think, God, how's this going to happen? But as Sam Medman said, 24 hours, it just goes bang, bang, bang. The story just gets away.
Just on Caleb then, the whole young player goes to Sydney, as you said, doesn't ever quite settle in. I mean, how big an issue is that still for players? Is retention still going to be an issue for these clubs? And we're seeing it with Gold Coast in particular at the moment.
And
Brisbane.
It depends. And I think it depends on two fronts. It depends on the personality of the player and... are they ready before the draft to go interstate? And then how does the transition, and depending on where you go. So I reckon some of the country kids, without making or stereotyping too many of them, Sydney's a big city. So they'll either really love it or it's the other way. This place is too big. There's too many flashing lights. The traffic's doing my head in. Where do I go fishing? Where do I get my sort of country feel? But those kids might make the transition to Perth a lot better because there's beaches and it's a bit quieter lifestyle. And then an element of that too is from a club point of view. I also believe in Caleb's case, he's had a really difficult year with injuries. So he had syndesmosis twice on an ankle and then did his shoulder, basically, and his shoulder reco. So he played the first 4 games of the year, I think it was, in the AFL team, the first 3 games. And basically missed every week bar 2 weeks. Would Caleb's decision have been different if he played the whole year? I don't know. Could have been different. But when you're in, when you're having times of adversity too, you go to your family or you go to your mates. If you don't have that infrastructure, albeit how good the clubs are, and this is not a GWS issue, I think that it may have been, it could have been a different circumstance.
Have you, where are you at with where he might play?
No. So Caleb informed GWS on Thursday that he was wishing to return home. We'll now run a process where we'll talk to 3 to 4 clubs. I've fielded some calls over the last couple of days. Once Caleb gets back to Melbourne, which we're working through the timeline on that, then we'll sit down with 3 to 4 clubs and have a conversation.
Who rang? You've got a pretty good understanding of who knows what. Did the club expect it?
They had a fair idea. But I've been open with them all year, and so was Caleb. So it wasn't like, where's all this come from? We've been in conversations.
You're a football person. You played footy, and I know you really like the game, and I know you like the traditions of football, and everything that goes with being in a footy club. How does that sit with you when this free agency has arrived and players are leaving it at all ages, which we discussed before? From a personal front, you've got your profession and you're probably your own beliefs in where footy should be. How do you deal with that?
I reckon I got agitated through the draft process last year when other clubs were interviewing Jack Silvani, because I thought you can't have Jack play at any other club than the Carlton Footy Club.
I agree with you there.
And I love the romance. I've got young Josh Dacos that'll come through in this draft, and we can't have a Dacos play anywhere else, but that's the reality. There's my professional cap that I have to wear Monday to Friday. Come the weekends, I think when I'm watching footy, I love the father-son rule. I love the fact that players play at one club for their whole career. But the reality is, where the world we live in now, there's free agency, there's trade, there's a business, there's different windows that clubs sit in, there's the time where clubs need to move on players and bring picks in.
Yep.
I think for the fan, what you've got to understand is hopefully this is making your club more successful more frequently because they are able to turn over their list. And sometimes at that certain time in the club's journey, that player's not the right fit and it's better to trade him on.
But we used to love players. Dermot went to other clubs. Like North Melbourne, bad example. Bad example. But Hawthorn treated him with disdain. He had no alternative. But say, for example, King is here. So North Melbourne fans would have loved David King. And Hutto, you had players. When I was growing up as a kid, I loved certain players.
Yep.
Probably more than the club. But now I feel that it's going to have to go back to loving the club more than loving players, because the fear is they're not going to be there. Some of them might not be there. Patrick Dangerfield, you've got the club. The saying that a club is bigger than the individual, that is going to become more popular than it's ever been.
Are we going to go the other way? Are we going to be like America, where people don't really follow the Chicago Bulls, they don't follow the New York Knicks? It's a little bit of individuals. So,
a franchise. Yeah.
Well, test me if Cyril ends up at Essendon. Yeah.
You've tested us for a while. Hey, can I ask about Tom Rockliffe?
Yeah.
What's the likelihood that he'll be at Brisbane next year?
No, I'm pretty confident, really confident.
What's
he will
mean?
Be.
100%, 90%, 80%?
I'd be 99%. Only
if I was a journo asked that question, I would write that he's almost certain to stay. That's how I would interpret. When someone says they're pretty confident, I would say that he's almost certain to go.
Certain to pretty strong.
I'll tell you that I spoke to Swanee on Tuesday night and talked through a number of things. Tom's preparing to be at the Brisbane Lions. He's working on his program that he's been given by them. We're not going to talk to any other clubs.
People have alleged he's got blood on his hands of two coaches. How does that sit with you?
Yeah, not good, because Lepper and Tommy had a really good chat Monday night.
Lepper said on Thursday night, actually. I think it was last night, Thursday night. He's catching up with Tommy. I actually thought Lepper and Rockliffe had a reasonable relationship as coach-captain.
They had a really good relationship.
Where's all this noise coming from then, Tom?
Is that just at the start? Is it the same all the way through, Tom?
the good relationship. Yeah. Oh, I think that at any time that captains will always have challenging relationships with their coach because that's part of their role. There's times where they'll butt heads. I reckon there's a few weeks where Tom and Leppa haven't agreed on things, but I can tell you right now where it ended, they had a really good relationship.
I don't know.
And we all caught up, and Leppa has – it's been widely reported throughout the course of the year that we had some troubles trying to recontract Tom. I can tell you right now, Leppa and I have had a long-standing relationship through previous management companies and those sort of things. Leppa was calling me saying, Tommy, you got to get this done. This is really important for my footy club. And I was saying, Leppa, I do want to get it done, but I'm having some troubles getting it done. It's not that it's our lack of intent to get it done. So, no, they're all right.
The issue that Tom wanted more money because a lot of other players on that list were getting paid really good coin, and he was captain, and he was all Australian. He's won some best and fairest, I think. Was that a major issue?
The biggest issue was we never received a counter offer, so I negotiated with myself.
So you put an offer in and Brisbane Lions didn't come back. No. It makes it a bit difficult, doesn't it?
And then I put another one in and I didn't get one back.
Where's all this noise coming from about Tommy? And what's he think about it?
Well, Danny Daly's probably pseudo-coach for the next couple of weeks. It's not coming from Danny, because I spoke to Danny as well during the week. It's not coming from Swanee. I feel like there's probably the lack of a really strong footy head in that place, that it may be... what do they say? The empty vessel makes the most noise. So it might be a 5% minority within the footy club. But the key people that I deal with have all got good relationships with him and all really comfortable and want him to be there.
He'll be speaking tonight at the Best and Fairest.
Yep.
I'm expecting Tom Rockliffe to really make a strong statement tonight. I wrote about it this morning. Here's an opportunity for Tom Rockliffe to be captain of this football club and say... some really, really strong things. So I'm really looking forward to listening to his speech tonight.
So if he wasn't going to, he better go and change that speech.
But I suspect he will. He's captain of a football club and the coach has just been sacked. This is his time, Dermot, where a leader has to stand up and speak to the masses at maybe the most important club night of the year.
I'd let it slide a bit. I really would.
Would you?
Sometimes less is better. In my mind, I would let it slide.
You clarity.
Make your statement. The new coach who comes in eventually will make all the strong statements.
Tom, we appreciate you coming in. I know you've got to go off and mow the lawn like
not
the rest
the support
of us
I
on
thought
this
I was get,
footy but... free Saturday. So thanks very much. We appreciate it. Thanks for being with us on Crunch Time.
Thanks, guys.
Back with more in a moment. Oh, the magnificent tones of not Barry good. White. He's back once again, which can only mean one thing for the Australian Property Group. Wholesale Mortgage Fund returning 7% per annum, paid quarterly. And Ringwood Mazda, score a demo deal now with the team down at Ringwood Mazda. It's time for Derm's Diaries again. Robbo, and you're going to shock Derm with what you're going to talk about today.
Well, it's finals time, so we're going to go to some finals performances.
Dermot time.
Let's be honest, Dermot.
Which final series, Mark?
When you walked in at halftime at Waverley... You're only 10 points up, actually, at half-time.
Which, when are we talking? At Waverley?
At Waverley.
So the grand final,
1991, grand final, West Coast Hawthorn. It's only 10 points at three-quarter time. And then Hawks hit 8 goals to 1 coming home. At three-quarter time, were you thinking about winning the game or were you also thinking, I might be a chance for the Norm Smith today?
Never gave the Norm Smith a thought.
When did you start?
He just snorted. Oh, no,
when did you start thinking about? When did you start thinking about? I was laughing at his answer. When did you start thinking about the Norm Smith?
No, I never thought about the Norm Smith. Only when I think I booted 3 in the last quarter. We brained him in the end. I thought, just wonder if I can get a couple of more quick ones.
Can you remember your stats? I've got them here. In front of me.
It would have been 15, 16 maybe.
16 kicks, 9 marks, 4 handballs, 4 goals, 5.
Ducky, 5 points.
5 points.
That's not right.
Freeze 4-2. Freeze
9 shots at it.
Freeze 4 with 2. Freeze against 9.
I acted
one. That's no surprise.
Yeah, I acted one free kick and got a goal in the third quarter, which should not have been awarded.
Well, hang on. So that disappoints me when you say that, because I've sat here for 8 years and you talk about John Law said to me and rah, 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 and don't bloody act and don't duck your head, and now you're admitting that you played for a free kick and got it.
Yeah, because John Worsfold was running back with the flight of the ball, made contact with me before the ball got there, and it would have unsettled me as I went for the incoming ball.
What would have John Worsfold
his contact back? With me. Yeah. He made contact with me before the ball came in. So technically it was a free kick. But if that was, you know, a free kick 2 out of 10, I gave it a bit of mayonnaise on the top to make sure I got the free kick. And probably should have been line ball play on.
You don't like that player's acting though, do you?
No, I don't like it. I just don't like when you act hurt to do something. Yeah, to get a free kick. Yeah.
Right. You've anyway, gathered. You've gathered. You've ran around the ground with your tip top bread. I think it was tip top, wasn't it?
So that was 88.
Oh, was it?
88.
Oh no. So I've just got my grand finals mixed up. So you're all gathered. You're all patting yourselves on the back. Well done. Mm-hmm. And they're just about to announce Norm Smith. Did you think you were seriously a chance?
No.
Because Paul Dee had an unbelievable... He played his best game of football
ever.
He has played. He had 26 and kicked 2. He was sort of playing centre forward, wasn't he?
He was. The way that's it... No, I didn't think I did. No, and I thought Punker was better than me, and I thought... I think it was Ben Allen in the middle was incredibly
Dunstall
good.
Kicked 6.
Yeah, we... The thing is, Alan Joyce was the coach, and we came to the conclusion if we could get their key backman, i.e. playing on Dunstall, Paul Dear, and myself, to have to shuffle around to try and bridge up the damn wall, we were half a chance. Well, we were halfway there, and we did that. They had to shuffle them fairly quickly, and then our midfield was pretty good for most of the day. Jimmy Morrissey played a great game too. Chris Lewis was arguably in the top 3 or 4 midfielders in the comp, and Jimmy, the freak, played on him that day and just completely ironed out any.
Lewis had 5 possessions.
Yeah, he absolutely blanketed him.
Are you annoyed, or any of your teammates annoyed, that the thing that gets talked most about the 1991 Grand Final is the Batmobile?
Hey, can I ask you about, because we know your tribunal record, going into a grand final, like everyone says, oh, everything's on the line today, anything goes, anything goes in a grand final, and given your preparedness to sort of step over that line occasionally, did you ever enter a grand final thinking, if something happens today, I'm getting involved?
Only once. It was 85 against Essendon. And not that 91. I was actually very confident going in that. And quarter time, still really confident. Half time, 3 quarter time, always thought we were going to get them and run over them. I thought it was going to be a second half run over. I thought they would fatigue badly. 85 was that game. We'd been belted up physically by Essendon so much. I've talked to you about this for quite some time, Robert.
But have you ever thought of, say, in those days,
Alistair Lynch-ish in the goal square, that's what you...
But often when the game was sliding, that you would see a team get physical, start a fight, try and change the course of the momentum of the game. Did you ever think that was something you would do in a big game like that?
I had tried it. Yeah, I'm being honest, it didn't have to be a grand final to think that. Yeah, if you thought it was going to benefit the club, the team, to get the win... Yeah, some people won't like that. They'll say that's playing outside. We were a very, very heavily penalised team because we do stuff to win games.
Have a look at these stats. This is the 1991 Grand Final. For the you kids out there, you weren't born, you won't know what we're talking about. People of our vintage will see the comparison. Kingy, Hawthorn, 311 possessions only.
I reckon 80 would be handballs.
Kicks, 234, handballs, 77.
Well,
there was a total of 20 tackles for Hawthorn.
20?
20 tackles.
Different tackle stats. I'll explain it in a second.
West Coast were animals. They had 32, which is a lot, 32 to 20. They also had, total possessions was 249. Isn't that crazy?
It's not much with the ball in hand, is it?
They were all go forward, though, weren't they?
Everything went forward.
If you did those numbers on today's games, you'd probably find they're the same. If you just counted the go forward possessions, you'd probably find
it'd be worth doing, actually. It'd be worth finding out that.
Could do that. Yep.
You know what else it is?
Something good to do during this final series, actually. I mean, just a different way of looking at the use of the ball in a big prelim or a qualifying or
meters
even a grand
gained,
final.
Mark. Meters gained. They'd be the same as today.
That's very true, Dermot.
Yeah, because they
I
don't
forgot about
they rarely game. Went sideways. They were a good team, and they were probably a better team than Hawthorn in 1991, but it was know-how that let them down in the end.
How do you rate the 91 team? Because it started to transition, with some players coming in, Paul Hudson and some of those sort of players, compared to your other Hawthorn teams.
The 1990 team, which finished fifth, was a better team than the 91 team. We just got injuries at the wrong time and the like.
This was the team.
88 was the best
team. Two seconds. Ben Allen, Dean Anderson, Gary Ayres, Dermot, Andrew Collins, Anthony Condon had a cracking game. He had 28, Condon.
He's a good player,
He Condon. Was a really good player, wasn't he?
He was tough.
Paul Deer, Jason Dunstall, Andy Gowers, Tony Hall, Paul Hudson, Darren Jarman had 5 possessions, Darren Jarman. Ray Jenke, good Chris player, Langford, Ray. Stephen Lawrence. Now, Stephen Lawrence was
the ruckman of the comp in the finals.
He had the second most marks. He took 10 on grand final day. Mm. This is a really good game. He had 21 possessions, 10 marks, and 18 hitouts.
That suspended that game too.
What, did
only
really?
Time in his career.
Chris Spew, James Morrissey, Johnny Platton, Darren Pritchard.
Chris Spew. Did you say Chris Spew? That's rhyming slang.
I know, that's for you. Rhyming slang for his own name. It was a decent team, but for whatever reason, and it's hard to hit it on the head before. It's remembered for the Batmobile a lot. It's remembered because it was at Waverley. It was remembered because it was a blowout in the end. But I don't care what anyone says. When people say you've got to move the grand final from the MCG, I go, nah.
Did it feel like a grand final?
When you ran out and you heard the crowd, it felt like a grand final. The only time it doesn't feel like a grand final for me is when on the few occasions I've watched it back on the TV. Because it's your viewership is used to seeing the MCG spaces. It only felt like non-grand final watching it on TV.
75,000 there. It's a solid crowd. Mm. Solid crowd.
A couple of things that about Waverley, which I'll give you a weird little Forrest Gump, where we've been, what we've done fact. Yeah. You know when you drive out to Waverley and you see the big mosaic out the front?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that was modelled on a mark that Kelvin Templeton took. And I worked for the VFL, and the bloke's name who made the mosaic was, I think it was Friedrichsen. He also did the East Melbourne Fire Station, that huge, big mosaic on that. So Alan Schwab said to me when I was 19, 20 years of age, he said, for the next 3 Wednesdays, for 2 hours on Wednesday afternoons, you have to go to Harold Friedrichsen's studio and stand there with your shirt off and in a pair of footy shorts and do the pose of the Kelvin Templeton mark, and you are his, model?
Double,
for that. So that mosaic up there is me in the based on the mark by Kelvin Templeton. Off. But that's me as the model.
I'm glad you got to the end of that story. Yeah. Going to a Friedrichsen's house.
No, he's
taking your clothes
studio.
Off. Taking your clothes off in the studio.
Hey, studio, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Where is that? Is it still there?
It's right in the middle of Waverley. Yeah, it's up on the... Yeah. A huge thing, about 10 metres high. Yeah.
Well, right. Thank you for taking us back to 91.
We'll have some other finals memories to come in the next month.
Yeah, he rang me yesterday and said, can you talk about me?
Time to talk finals.
Me 8 goals. And I said, we'll do it later in the finals, too.
No, I didn't.
Grand final, maybe we'll do it.
And I got 20, didn't I?
That's it, boys, for another big crunch time. Don't forget, plenty of footy here on 11:16 SEN. Saturday Sports Central coming up. Johnny Ralph is going to be in the studio next hour, then extended coverage of VFL qualifying final between Collingwood and Williamstown. Who are you tipping there, Kingy?
No idea, Anthony.
Robbo?
Collingwood,
yeah. Also, racing from Moonee Valley. So a big afternoon of footy ahead. Stay with us here on 11:16 SEN. Crunch time, as always, brought to you by Australian Property Group Wholesale Mortgage Fund, returning 7% per annum paid quarterly, and Ringwood Mazda. Go and score a demo deal this afternoon.